Welcome to Charting the Course, a podcast from Full Sail Capital, dedicated to providing you with insights, assurance, and confidence to grow and manage generational wealth. Full Sail Capital is a fiduciary registered investment advisor managing more than $1.5 billion with a focus on integrity, competency, and transparency.
Welcome back. We're going to jump right back into our conversation with Roger and Lauren Workington today. But if you missed part one, go back and give that a listen. Or if you've missed any of the previous interviews that were part of this series on stewarding generational wealth, be sure to check those out. So let's send it back to Dexter. Hope you enjoy the rest of this conversation.
So you were talking about how Eric went down to do a tech support call. So the business has grown. You've got more employees. Their kids are getting involved. If you would kind of give us kind of some hard stats for what the business looked like as the kids started getting older to the point where they could get more involved in a real sense as opposed to just doing janitorial duties on Saturdays.
The business was growing. When Eric started installing and training customers, we had Eric and one other installer. And within the next probably 6 months, we added three or four more installers. Our customer base was growing at that point.
How many total customers do you think you had, Roger, in that time frame? You said this is like 02?
02.
1,000?
No. 300 or 400 probably, maybe, somewhere in there. 03, 01, 02 is when we started growing.
What about by the time, just out of curiosity, what about by the time you got to 2017? How many customers did you have? 2016, 2017?
2016, we had 2,500.
Okay. All right. And how many employees did you have at that point?
140.
Okay.
Go ahead, Scott.
And your office at that point, you guys relocated, if my memory serves me, in 2015.
Yes.
To the facility that you constructed. And just kind of a fun fast fact was that you built the facility, which was designed to withstand a direct hit from a tornado, because you all got taken out by a tornado in 99. Is that right?
That's correct. The May 3rd, 1999 tornado totally destroyed our office. The office was 52,000 square feet. We're in Moore, Tornado Alley, or it used to be Tornado Alley. Seems to be kind of moving.
You shouldn't have said that.
But we had a...
That's me knocking on wood there.
Our warehouse was constructed to be a safe room. And it was a 4,000 square foot safe room.
Right.
Thankfully, we never had to use it.
Well, that's what you want. You want to spend a bunch of money building something like that that you hope you never use. But what year did the kids begin to get involved professionally?
Well,
we're going to let Lauren talk about the pre-professional stage,
right,
which sounds interesting.
Yes. Eric started in 2001 being an installer and trainer.
Right.
And so at that point, he was full-time working in the company.
What about Amy?
Amy started 2006, I think, something like that. She started in the tech support area.
Did Eric and Amy want to start in the business, or did you say, hey, this is what you're going to do?
Well, no. What we did... Eric was the first one, and we told him that he needed to go get a job somewhere. We were not going to offer him a job. I had coached Eric through some of Little League baseball, and of course, he always thought I was harder on him than everybody else, probably was. But what we wanted to do is to make sure he understood what it was like to work for somebody else. And after working somewhere else, he was not real happy. And we said, you know, we can give you a job.
Eric was a waiter.
He sold cars. He was a waiter. And we said, we can give you a job, but you're going to work and you're going to earn it.
Okay.
Through high school, he'd worked as a janitor for us after hours and when he's not playing in the sports and things.
If you don't mind, how did you determine each of the kids' roles within the company? Was it their natural skill set and interest? Was it company role availability? How did that go?
A little bit of both, because Eric's interests definitely were not in training and installing computers.
That's weird.
He was a big-time gamer, so he kind of knew his way around computers to that extent.
Yep.
He's definitely a people person, and I can tell you that this first lady that he went to South Texas to install thought it was maybe the best installation she'd ever had, and it wasn't long, and we were sending him back down to the South Texas area on a very regular basis. People liked him.
Right.
Didn't matter that he really had no idea what he was doing when he got down there. I mean, literally, he hadn't even seen the software, probably.
It's all right. Fake it till you make it.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And
what about Amy and Lauren?
Amy, I don't remember exactly when she got out of school.
You said she started the company in 06. Does that sound right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
when did Lauren start?
A lot of this is very blurry, clearly.
Yes. 2010.
Does that sound right to you, Lauren?
Close.
All right. So Lauren, that's when you came on in a professional role. Is that right?
January of 2011.
Okay. 2011. Okay. Yes.
My first big girl job. Yes, that's correct.
Yeah. So, but wait, real quick. So, Lauren, before you came on professionally, tell us about the pre-professional phase that...
The budding entrepreneur phase?
Yeah. Yeah. You started... What was your very first job at ComputerRx?
Janitor,
okay.
For sure. So all three of us, siblings, did the same role. So we were all janitors. And essentially, when Eric went off to college, correct me if I'm wrong, Amy became janitor. I assisted Amy. And then when she went to college, I was the lead janitor.
Head janitor.
Yeah. For a while, Amy and I did it together because the building got big enough. But then I was janitor. And then we would work some summers helping with pack statements or just odd job stuff. I don't think that was paid, but helped.
When did you found the budding vending business?
I was in high school and we had several people ask, the people asked, I just listened. And
people
employees
of ComputerRx. Okay.
I talked about where we were located. There wasn't a lot of places to go get drinks or there wasn't a Sonic on the corner. There was eventually, but not when we moved. And so it started with a $300 vending machine from Sam's countertop. And I talked them into making me a loan to buy inventory and the machine. I had a plan. I presented a PowerPoint. This was a real plan. I think I was in early high school and put a countertop vending machine and then eventually took that. And I had to pay to restock it. It was some startup capital from loan.
Yeah. 27% interest.
Yeah.
Yeah. Got it.
And then that moved into cold beverage vending machines. And then as they grew, I added a second machine and then sold my first business. Sold the machines.
Who'd you sell to?
To my brother.
Okay.
So I did it all. I filled the machines all through college and then high school, college. And then it would have been maybe a first few years of working. It just got to be, the return was not worth my time. It got to be too much. And my brother had young kids at that point. So he bought the machines and the inventory and his boys would help him stock it.
So as the kids start to move from janitorial roles and vending machine operators into, I don't want to call them real roles within the company, but whenever they had professional responsibilities to ComputerRx, how did you navigate those business and personal familial relationships? What was that dynamic like from your point of view, Roger?
To some extent, we didn't do a great job on that. Anytime we were all together, we would be talking about what needed to be done at ComputerRx, the good things that happened, the bad things that had happened, what we needed to do to change it. It was pretty much consuming everything that we did.
But you were open with the kids about what was going on with the business.
Yes, I think they were pretty well aware of everything that was going on. Everybody was in a different department. Eric was in the installers and he was working with them. At that point, we had probably 25 installers and he would work with them. Amy was working in the phone support, later moved into the accounting side of it. Lauren started full-time working in sales and working with, we had at that point, two salesmen.
How was that dynamic for you, Lauren? Just because you've got a kind of across with some siblings and up with parents. How was that dynamic from your perspective?
I mean, the dynamic I think was always good for the most part. I think there's family business. It was some of the greatest memories, but there were some tense holidays periodically, or everybody was in their own kind of lane and got along really well. We all had the same end goal. So I think it was a good dynamic. Jokingly, I know how to get what I want from these two. So I was very good at working up. I could lead up very well.
Did you?
I'm just kidding.
Did you ever feel pressured to be involved with the family? Was that something that you felt like you needed to do or had to do?
Yes and no. I mean, I think they did a really good job with all of us, maybe the first two more so than me, but with all of us of go get a job somewhere else. You don't have to be here. This is not the expectation. Like, I think they did preach that pretty well. But I also think there's a sense of, I mean, it was our life. Like, we grew up to what we were talking off before. I mean, my childhood was spent in a pharmacy. my childhood was not Hillcrest. The siblings were more in Hillcrest, but they had obviously sold it at that point. But elementary school was getting out of, mom would pick me up from school and we would head down to probably Idabel or wherever. And I don't know where, but small town, a couple hour drive. And I'd do my homework in the car and we'd have dinner at the pharmacy. My dad worked. Like, that was our childhood. There's a pressure's not the right word. It's in your blood. But not from them. There was not necessarily pressure from the parents.
Let's get into the topic of as you were elevating in the business and the siblings were elevating in the business and the business was growing, you continued to take on more responsibilities. You eventually wound up being a critical part of management for the firm, for the company, right? You, Roger, at some point have to make the decision about what comes next for yourself and for Carol. That's a decision you guys are going to make together. And then also for the benefit of the kids. Walk us through that transition from how you started to think about that and how you approach the kids with that. Because ultimately you decided, if I recall the story correctly, that, you know, Lauren was going to kind of be the successor. Walk us through that.
As the company got larger, Carol and I both decided that it was time that we kind of back off a little bit, that we transition this over to the kids. And that was our intent originally. We had met with some people about doing a successor trust or something like that. And we had actually even started the process. And we were going to transition over with Lauren, Eric, and Amy. It was pretty much our decision that any one of them individually probably could not do this. Together they could, and they seemed at the point to kind of want to. We found out, unfortunately, after we started, that this is probably a 10-year process. We weren't prepared to go 10 years.
The Tandy was probably getting tired too.
Yes, early on, I don't want to say this was a 24-hour a day job, but it wasn't
pretty
that,
darn close.
It wasn't that bad. It was 19 to 20, maybe.
Well, I can add to that. I think hindsight, I can look back. As a kid, it didn't feel like they worked all the time. Like, I saw they were, and we said this earlier, they were at every sporting event. They were at every school thing, at least one parent, because we had two siblings in sports. So it was divide and conquer sometimes. But they were at everything. And now as an adult, I look back and I see dad worked. I don't know what time he went to the office, probably before we went to school. Came home at 5:30. We had dinner. We would go to bed and then he'd probably work till what, 1 a.m.? But you don't see, as a kid, I think I saw that, but we didn't see it. So add color. He did work. They did work a lot of hours.
Lauren, if you don't mind, whenever you think back to that time period and people ask what your dad did, what would you say?
Oh, I got this a lot. He worked on a computer. I had no idea what he did. I literally would tell people he works on a computer. I had no concept. I don't know when I figured it out, and I knew he worked with pharmacies, obviously, because we were in them a lot, but I think I would say, I don't know, he works on a computer.
So did you go to the kids at that point? You had the conversation, 10 years is too long, we got to...
Well, actually, at that point, Lauren started expressing some interest in not doing computer RX. Eric, at that point, was pretty indifferent. If everybody else did, he would. But he really didn't want to. He definitely wanted no part of management. And that was even while he was working there.
Got it.
That wasn't his bag. He was very personable. He got along with people. He could relate to a lot of the employees. But he wasn't even slightly interested in that.
How much did you see Lauren's decision to say that she had other interests? I don't exactly know what the exact terminology would be, but how much did you see that coming with regards to Computer X not being the path for her?
That thought was there because 2-3 years earlier, we were at a trade show in Denver, and she had mentioned at that point that she was thinking about something else, and then kind of had gotten back into Computer RX, but there had always been a little bit of a thought that this isn't really what she wanted to do.
So Lauren was set to be your successor.
Yes.
And Amy was going to step into the role of Carol's job of being the keeper of the things that came in.
Right. And that's
the collector.
Amy was working with Carol in the accounting department. Lauren at that point was working independently to a great extent because we'd given her that much authority. All she had to do was get the final major changes okayed. But most of the day-to-day stuff she was already doing. And it seemed like it was going to work out real well. But there just was a little bit of discontent that they really, we didn't want to push them into taking over the business. That's when we had an offer to purchase the business, and we said, I think that's the best thing for all of us. As it turns out, it has been the best thing for all of us. All three kids are doing much better on their own.
Lauren, interject here. Walk us through that from your side of things real quick, because this is a really important part of, I think, this story overall that I really want to make sure it gets across.
You know, for me, from a pretty young age, Computer X is what I wanted to do. And as I said earlier, I still love it. Like, independent pharmacy will always have a special place. Some of the best, I think I was there professionally, like, what, just shy of 10 years? Best 10 years. I don't want it to sound like I didn't love it, but there were seasons of maybe something deep of like, is this where I'm supposed to be? And I, for a lot of years, kind of pushed it down because I loved everything about it. So I think that I struggled with why am I feeling this way, because I love my job. I love the customers. We're building this great legacy. Like, everything about it was, why would I be questioning? I think when we talked about this as a family, there was also a sense of, I could never explore why I had that, because I went straight from college into that, and you can't just leave and come back. I mean, we had that discussion. It's not like I can go take a 2-year sabbatical and try another career and come back. I guess technically I could have, but really with where the business was, I couldn't. So it was just there was just always a longing of, is this where I'm supposed to be? And I think there's some sense of, I wanted to make my own path. It's hard to explain.
You mentioned it's not black and white, so I hope it's okay to ask. What's the hardest part? Maybe regret's the right word. What do you miss most about leaving Computer RX? Is it the employees? Is it the business model? What do you think is one of the things that's hardest for you there?
I think all of it. We had a really good, the people from the customers to the employees were family. And I think probably the biggest though is, there was such a pride in what they had created and the reputation they had created.
Legacy.
The legacy and the way they had taken care of people. And I think even now, looking back at the industry, I think there's a sense of, I don't want to say regret, because I think we all know it was the right decision, but the Work and Team name, like continuing to take care of pharmacy the way they did. That's probably the biggest, and the people. I mean, we had a good group. We had a lot of fun.
From the standpoint of being fair to summarize this, I'll say this. I hope what people are getting across as they listen to this is which is really important to as a takeaway, is you guys had this discussion as a family, and it was an open discussion, mm-hmm. and it was an honest discussion.
And it was a ongoing discussion. This was correct. Not a single one-time discussion.
That's right.
Yeah, and this was over years.
And there was a real respect behind not only envisioning what was right for the business, but what was right for the next generation of people that's involved. What I see, what mm-hmm. we see a lot, are families that essentially try to force down a business. If you're not sure that's where your passion is, you're not going to be willing to do what Roger did, which is work 19 hours a day quietly mm-hmm. and discreetly to put in that time over many decades to build it. It won't continue that way. I think so often we see families try to do that, and then they wonder why down the road there's resentment and there is animosity, and it creates a weird family dynamic. I've spent enough time with you guys, including Amy and Eric, to know you all have a wonderful family dynamic that is rooted deeply in respect for each mm-hmm. other. And that's something that I think a lot of people, if they knew what you had, they would envy it, because it's something that I see a lot of people don't have. So
I think that's very true.
Carol from the Peanut Gallery is adding that there were times when it was difficult and they had to work through it, but that's a part of that process. It's never going to just be a sit down, simple conversation. Everybody goes their own path. But the idea that you guys came through that together collectively and then move forward. And I think that's kind of where I think hopefully Dexter goes next is, you left and so started your own thing. But before we go that route, Roger, real quickly, as you look to sell the business, you ultimately decided to sell, no specifics, but tell us a little bit about how that came to pass.
By the time we chose to sell, we had become, I think, the fifth largest software vendor in the United States. We had customers in 48 of the 50 states. We also had, probably 97% retention. We had customers that have been on the software since the 80s. That's unheard of in the business. I would say we had the best reputation in the industry with our customers. And that was one of the factors that they looked at when they made us an offer.
They being your buyer.
Yes.
Yeah. And the buyer's essential general is private equity. Is
right.
Who knocked on your door.
Yes.
Right. Okay.
They purchased another software company out of Florida. And in the course of doing their due diligence, they surveyed nearly every independent pharmacy in the country. And our name came up as nearly the only software vendor that they were not interested in switching from. And that made a impression on them, and they attempted to then make the purchase. We were at the spot that to grow anymore, to keep running the business, was going to be a lot of work. It was more work than Carol and I wanted to do. We didn't want to dump this heavy amount of work on the kids if they really weren't interested in it. And one of the things I can say that Lauren was very good at what she was doing, was fully capable of running it. Amy was pretty invested in the company. Eric would have stayed. He was willing to do whatever. If we sold, he was good. If we didn't, he was good. But he really wasn't committal. But he was not going to be part of the management. That was going to make it tough because I know the amount of hours that you were talking about, the 19, 20 hours a day. And if they're not 100% committed to doing that, it's not good to put that on them.
100% agree. Yep.
At that point, we didn't believe they were. And we thought that if we sold the company, ComputerX can continue on. They could then choose to stay with the company because they were offered positions, or they could leave. And then it wouldn't be a family. Since we weren't going to be the owners, if they chose to leave, then it wasn't going to be on an affront to us. And that let them choose what they wanted to do.
And what was the year you sold in? What year?
2016.
2016. Okay. And so then, Lauren, you decide to chart your own path from there, your own course, if you will.
Ooh, I see what you did there.
Short pun for the name of the podcast.
So you started your own business, William and Lauren. Just tell us a little bit about that company, if you would, please.
Yeah. I mean, this is a far better story, but yeah. So I did. I started, William and Lauren does custom clothing, so suits.
Which is not a natural progression at all from independent pharmacy software. So how did that happen?
It is and it isn't.
Okay.
So,
from my vantage point, it's not.
On the outside, it's not a natural progression. Did not grow up in textiles, did not grow up. I did not know how to sew until COVID. Did not grow up in that world, but it is a natural progression because the idea was born while I was at ComputerX. And I think what you heard is it's in my blood to fill a hole and look and say, I can do it better. So while I was at ComputerX as a female, needed clothing, professional clothing, suits, blazers particularly, but professional clothing, it was nearly impossible to find. And as he mentioned, as I was progressing, I guess it had been 2015 probably, as I was progressing in my career, I was in a lot more meetings with more executive, like with independent pharmacies. I was not going to show up in a suit to an independent pharmacy in Idaho, Oklahoma. But on the other side of the business was more of the executive, you know, McKesson's and who else, all the big guys. And I struggled to find stuff. And so I think I have their blood in me. And I just always wondered, like, there's got to be something better. Couldn't find it. So, and I think this pairs up, honestly, I think it pairs up with, I don't tell this side of it much, but I also had that longing at that period of probably more insecurity, if we call it what it is, of was I capable of doing it, or was I just there because I was kin to these two wonderful people? And so I think there, I started down a path of, could I fill this hole of professional clothing, primarily for women, honestly, and then discovered there's a hole for men as well. And I basically built the business in 2015 with not having the intention of doing it full time.
So what is that dynamic like with being the child of a successful entrepreneur? So you mentioned earlier the legacy aspect. So I just imagine there's, to some degree, he casts a large shadow. Your parents, excuse me, both cast a large shadow, which can be a detriment. But also you've got the resources of somebody who's already done it, and you were able to witness that firsthand. Just what's that dynamic like being the child of a successful entrepreneur?
They do cast a shadow but it's not them that cast it. I think it's myself that takes it. Like, I say that from a sense of there is a lot of pressure is not the right word. I thought a lot about this question of seeing what they created growing up and seeing how they treated the people they worked with. And I think this is true in any business. It wasn't pharmacy necessarily. How they took care of their employees, how they took care of their customers, how they, all of that. I would love to create something similar. Like, I think there's an inspiration from that. But what I would add is I think when I was younger, there was a lot of pressure to be successful and to achieve and to live up to the standards. But as I've gotten older, and honestly, I think a lot of it was what we talked about a second ago, going through that navigation of having those hard conversations, I think I saw them through a different lens. And this, again, is on us, not them, of it really didn't matter if I was successful or not. Like, they, and I know this is silly, but like, I'll use this analogy. So growing up playing, I grew up playing basketball. My brother was, you know, Division I baseball player, gonna go pro, like, just very good at what he did. So that's what I watched. And so I thought I had to be a really good basketball player. I had to go to college. Like, I had to do the same, right? So I had that shadow. And I remember a conversation, again, I did not see this at the time, where dad said, "Is this what you want?" And I said, "Yes, I want to play college basketball." And so he rode me, and he got me up. You're committed. You
be
made that commitment.
Be careful when you answer that question to guy like your dad.
I didn't get this when I was 12 years old or however old I was, but we got up, we had private lessons. We got up for early practice. Like, it's a job. And I actually, even to the point he said, sports was the job. And if we quit, we had to get a job. He held true to that when I quit.
Yeah, you became a janitor, I heard.
Well, no, that's why I started working. I was already a janitor when I quit. Then that's when I started actually working a job. I was in the warehouse. But so I think it was very similar with the business. Was the second I told him, and I was in high school, I don't think college basketball is what I want. And he literally just said, okay, and never said another word about it. And I think it was the same. I say that, I think it's been the same with the business, of this pressure of success. But to see, I think it's been clear since the business is sold, as we just said, like, we can now be family. And if we're successful, that's great, but it's not contingent on our success. So yes, they cast a shadow of, I want to do what they did, but they don't, because we're loved unconditionally for who we are, not what we do. And I think I see that now.
Thanks for sharing.
Yeah.
Roger, just out of everything you kind of shared, as you reflect on you and Carol's journey with ComputerRx, is there anything you would tell newly minted entrepreneurs to do, that there's no value in that mistake? What should they do differently?
Yeah, what's the one thing you'd share with them?
Well, the one thing that we tried to do, and I think what was really critically important, as they mentioned, no matter how much work after hours, we tried to be at all of the kids' functions. That may mean if Eric had a baseball game, Lauren had a basketball game, that meant I'm going to work till 2, because I'm not going to work from 5:30 to 10. So I may work to 2 to 3. The kids, we tried to be at everything they were there. We wanted to make sure that we were a part of their lives as kids. Starting a business, trying to grow a business, is not an 8-to-5 job. And you can't just go home and quit. But you can go home and put it down for a while you're doing stuff with your kids.
That's great advice.
And then a lot of times they didn't see that I'm up most of the night, and sometimes pretty groggy when I went into the office in the morning.
Another person I have great respect for, Roger, besides you, is very close family friend of mine. And when I was in law school, my wife was pregnant. I was trying to finish up school. I was working full time for my family business and another business. And I remember saying to him, you know, I just don't have time for that. And he stopped me and he said, "Let me tell you something. You will always have time for the things you choose to make time for. And don't ever forget that." It's one of the best pieces of advice I ever got. I catch myself saying it all the time when I get busy. And that's exactly what I heard you just repeat. That's the second person I deeply admire that said it. So if you take something away from this today, the people that are listening, that's the thing I would take away. I appreciate you sharing that a lot, because that's something that I think a lot of people overlook. It clearly made a big impact on Lauren, and probably a big part of why she is the type of person she is today, is because she saw you make that time. That's awesome.
Scott, you mentioned contentment earlier. I would just be curious what your thought was there.
Oh, I mean, I just, you know, knowing them all personally, you would never, for as hard as he worked, for as much as he reached, for as much as he pushed, Roger and Carol both are incredibly content people. They're happy. They're happy in their own skin. They know who they are. They're just wonderful humans. And you know, my grandmother is that way. I admire my grandmother for her level of contentment. She just knows who she is and she loves that and she's happy all the time. And that's what I see from them. They know who they are as people. They don't let the outside world define them. I just really respect that about them. Have you always been that way? Have you and Carol always just been content people? You're happy right where you are?
Most of the time, I can say I don't fluctuate one way or the other a lot.
I know that about you.
I used to tell all of our employees they would be concerned whether I was upset with them or not. And my comment was, when I'm upset with you, you will know it. There will be
you
no
will
question.
Know it.
You will know it. But most of the time, I'm not. You know, and I might throw one other thing in that all three kids are doing, I would say, better today than they were doing when they were at Computer Rx. Amy was there and really wanted to do it really badly, I believe because she wasn't sure she could do anything else. And she knew that pretty well. Lauren was extremely good at doing that. Eric was an outstanding installer. Amy's in another business now and excelling at it. Lauren is doing very well in her businesses.
It's a good-looking jacket you're wearing, by the way.
Yes, it's a William and Lauren.
I paid him for that.
But
sponsored post.
But
probably sold him a Coke, too.
All three kids. And what we would mention is Amy's husband worked for us. Eric's wife worked for us.
Yeah, cousins, uncles.
Nephews. We had Carol's brother, his wife, a whole lot of the family worked for us. And that was one of the big problems that because the whole family worked when we were together, it was shop talk. Mm-hmm. And everybody is doing better. Everybody's happy.
Yeah.
I would add to that contentment comment because he's not saying this. I would like to clarify, I think contentment versus complacency, going off what I said earlier, and I think content for them is fair. They've always been big with us of don't live to work. Like, period. I think you've preached that forever with all of us. But on the other hand, he's also been, if you're happy where X, that's all you'll ever get. So whatever that's salary, whether that's whatever it is, if he's always pretty. And so same thing, like talking about sports, if you want to do something, you're going to put in the extra hours, you're going to drive for. So he's got the separated, there's no complacency.
Well, contentment and complacency
yeah,
are not synonymous.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think he won't say that, but very much that, and actually my friends who have met my parents are like, oh, you make more sense now. You know, because it's true, if you're they always preached, if you're going to do something, be good at it. To a point, but so like this is a prime example. We have a pool table. Growing up, we had a pool table, and you didn't just play pool. You understood how to get better at pool. You understood angles. You understood you didn't just go play pool. You were getting lessons. And I know it's a terrible example, but if you're going to do something, you're going to give it your best. You're not going to halfway do it. But you also should not. He's been very big with all of us kids about do not live to work.
I am beyond appreciative of you guys sharing your story. So there's a couple of questions we love to ask our guests at the end here. So Lauren, you're going to go first. If you would, what nouns are you most proud of that follow your name and include any adjectives that you need to for color there?
I'm not a fan of this question. I have no idea. I guess I would say friend, daughter, sister, probably. I mean, coffee drinker, because I have a cup of coffee in my hand. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
Roger, what about you?
Well, I guess I'd say dad and husband.
And papa.
And papa, yes. Mm. Friend would fall in there because we tried to treat all of our customers as friends, all of our employees as friends. That didn't always work, but we tried.
Scott, we could talk for hours. Is there anything that we left off here?
I don't think so. I just appreciate you guys both coming in and sharing the story and being open with people, and hopefully they'll listen and take things away.
Thank you guys so much. Until next time, fair winds and following seas.
If you enjoyed today's conversation, please review and subscribe through your preferred podcast platform. Have a great week. All opinions expressed by the host and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinions of Full Sail Capital. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as a basis for investment decisions. Clients of Full Sail may maintain positions in the securities discussed in this podcast.